Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside NBA champ Richard Jefferson. Four NBA finals for this man. I like to pub that a little more.
Whatever you need. Mm-hmm. No, I'm here for it.
Especially when you're sitting next to this seven-time ring over there, Robert Horry.
We shared a moment, though. We shared NBA finals together.
I share a lot of finals. They never went the way that I wanted to. But yes, we did.
Especially not the one with us, because you kind of like.
Yeah. Oh! And there we go. You're going to share a discussion on Lonzo Ball, gentlemen, in just a few minutes, because coming up, the Clippers are reportedly interested in trading for Lonzo. Do Richard and Robert like this idea, given that the Clips haven't won consecutive games in a month? Stick around to find out. First, though, we are thrilled to debut a new segment here on The Jump called Can I Have a Word? Let's start out in D.C., where the 13th place Wizards out East beat the Jazz, who own the best record in the league, of course. Bradley Beal scored 43 points. Russell Westbrook had 35, 15 rebounds, 13 assists. Jeez. After the game, Rudy Gobert challenged his teammates to fight back on the narrative about his team. Take a listen.
I think we have to understand that we haven't accomplished. You know, we've been to the second round a few times, but you know, we get upset when people kind of laugh at us on TV and disrespect us, and you know, and there's disrespect out there, but it's on us to have respect for ourselves.
All right, so Richard, can I have a word for Rudy Gobert's post-game comments?
No, I put it right here. Correct. He is 100% correct. One, he needs to challenge his teammates. As a defensive, you know, player of the year, as that guy multiple times, he is a person that needs to challenge his team defensively. The next part about it that I really agree with him is, like, they haven't accomplished anything. And so if you want that respect, it's a day in, it's a day out, and then it's a postseason. But the postseason starts now for them.
Yeah.
Robert, I'm going to ask you to reveal yours in a second, but do you agree on his point?
I totally agree with you, and it's kind of connects into what I want to say for my word.
All right, we're going to get you on screen here. All right. So there you go. What is your word?
My word is inconvenience.
Oh, all right.
And what I mean by that, if you want to be a champion, you can't have these little inconvenient losses, because you have to prepare yourself for the finals. You have to do these things. I say the finals, for the playoffs.
Yeah.
If you want to get to the finals, you can't have inconvenient losses, because you need the best record in the NBA, because you're one of the best teams that play at home. We know from years past, your fans are some of the best. So we know they're letting fans back into the stadiums, maybe, but we already seen them at your stadium. So you need this. You need this very much.
Did you write that?
I don't have very good penmanship, so.
Yeah, and I couldn't spell that. So
I want to shout out, actually, who wrote these. These entire boards were designed by our friend Katie Bomber. She did an amazing job.
Yeah,
we'll see throughout
job.
This segment.
Exactly. I like it.
We did not trust you to write anything.
No, that's smart.
Because we've met you before. Yeah. Next up, I want to talk about what James Harden has been doing out in Brooklyn. The Nets are 21-7 since forming their new Big Three, 12-1 since KD left the lineup with a hamstring injury last month. As we look at Harden's impressive numbers this season, I want to point out that no player has ever won MVP the same year they were traded. So, Robert, can I have a word for Harden's MVP case this season?
You know, I'm going with the word truthful.
Ooh.
What I mean by that, no disrespect to Paul Pierce, is that he's truly a good player. You know, we thought that he was just a guy that can dominate the ball in Houston. But no, this guy is a team player. You saw what he was in OKC. He was a good team player. But he said that moment, like all great players, I want to go out and see if I can shine them on. Now he realized he can't do that. So truthfully, he is a good player. He is a great player. He is an astonishing player. He's one of these guys that can change a team at any moment. So.
Yes, but this is my thing.
Uh-oh.
This is my thing.
You want to put your word up?
Oh, yeah, yeah, here's my word.
All right.
The word is difficult.
Dude.
It's going to be difficult for him to win, to your point, to get traded to a loaded team. And I know the narrative would be, well, you know, Kevin Durant missed time, and Kyrie Irving's missed time, and he's putting up historic numbers. Well, these are the same numbers that he's put up in Houston for the last 5 years. He's done this. And when we make it seem that, like, oh, he couldn't do it by himself, he had very good teammates. He was to multiple conference finals. Like, he was very, very close.
Well, you know, CP3 got hurt, so that's the only time he's really been close.
Close, but that's what I'm saying, though. He's actually already proven that he is that top, top tier, even as a winner, because he's had multiple best records. He's done all of these things with D'Antoni. He just couldn't get over that final hump.
But he didn't have pieces like this.
No, nobody has pieces like this.
He's not playing with pieces like this in this stretch.
But the thing is with him, though,
12-1 without Kevin Durant, which, by the way, I love the people who take those stats and they're like, oh, see, no one needs Kevin Durant. They need Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant.
But yes, they do.
That's still impressive in this chunk of the season.
But Kyrie's a top.
Kyrie's just coming back tonight. He's been in and out, too.
He's been in and out, but Kyrie just had like a 40 ball.
He has been consistently good, and he doesn't get hurt.
Yes.
That's the one thing we never talk about. He plays every game, and he doesn't get hurt. That's kudos to him for that.
No, I was just talking about that on the show yesterday because I think we're kind of missing that in what he's bringing to Brooklyn this season. We obviously have been talking about the change he made in his playing style, right, being more of a facilitator, helping everyone else shine. But think about this team. Kevin has been out for now, I think it's going to be around 6 weeks at least. Mm-hmm. Kyrie, as I said, just been in and out throughout the entire season. Mm-hmm. If James wasn't there, this is all of a sudden the Clippers team from last year, right? It's like, oh, these guys have great talent, but no one's ever on the floor at the same time, and it's not really till the playoffs, till they're playing together. Well, that's not true now of this Brooklyn team because James is there, and he is providing that stability.
Okay, how about this, Rach? I don't have a vote. You don't have a vote. If the NBA, if the MVP vote was today, Rachel,
yes.
Would he get your vote? I think he's first team All-NBA. That's an obvious thing in my opinion, so that means he's one of the top five players in the league. Would he be your MVP?
So, first of all, I never talk about who I'm voting for until it happens. Because guess why, Richard? We do still have the rest of the season to play. You're not making me fall into that
just
trap.
Just saying today.
But I will say that part of the equation is going to be, it's funny, when Harden first went to Brooklyn, I thought part of the equation was going to be, oh, he's playing with Kevin and Kyrie on those three-headed elite monsters. We usually don't, we can't separate out what you're doing as the MVP in such a way that you win. That's not really the case because he hasn't been playing with those guys consistently.
Exactly.
But I do think in a shortened season, it will hurt him that a number of his games came in Houston, where he was putting up some numbers, but certainly didn't look like
left Houston too is going to hurt.
That's going to be tough because you got all of the writers, the media, like, and it's like it's just going to be very difficult,
right?
Very difficult,
right? But
not that he's not deserving. I'm not saying that he couldn't.
Right.
But we're not saying he's not deserving. He's playing MVP candidate all through the season.
Yeah.
He just got traded, and other guys.
No, forced to trade.
Oh, yeah, forced to trade.
That's different between saying traded and forced
to
trade.
Right.
That's the key statement there. And James Harden is an MVP. He's been top three for the last, four or five seasons. Yeah. So, like, we're not surprised that he's in the top three again this year, especially with the team that he has and what he's doing. But when you force a trade and it's not pretty, you're not going to get
especially when a team gave you everything you wanted and you're like, oh, this is not working for me. I'm out. So it hurts him.
But I want to make clear, you guys are talking about the tendencies of voters, and I think you're both completely accurate.
Yeah, we're
accurate.
Talking about voters.
It's
talking about
not
voters.
A rule. I get kind of fans are out there, well, I thought the rule was you couldn't have two other people on your team. I thought the rule was if you had a trade. Oh. There's no rule. It's just what we know with trends over time with those 100 people who vote. And, Richard, I do want to just take a minute to say that while Katie Bummer designed these boards for us, I thought it was very sweet that you wrote hearts over your eyes.
Let me see.
And really, that speaks
when
to
I was
me.
Passing notes back in class before you could text, there was always hearts with the eyes.
You're not surprised.
Can't wait to see you next class, Richard, with a heart.
With a heart. Finally, we head out to Phoenix, finally, for everyone's benefit. Carl Anthony Towns. And number one overall pick. Anthony, I can't even imagine you in high school.
I was passing notes in college.
Your poor team.
That was poor
Anthony
Edwards
and Kat combining to score 83 against the Suns last night. Kat had 41-10-8. Edwards had 41 points, 8 boards. According to Elias, it was only the fourth time teammates aged 25 or younger each scored 40 or more. Kat and Wiggins did it in 2017. Richard, can I have a word for Kat and Edwards last night?
Shout out Gus Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
Bullets.
Hope.
Shout out Bullets.
Hope.
Aww.
This is why there should be hope. Because Andrew Wiggins wasn't that guy. I think they established that. Very good player, deserving of the number one pick at the time. Very good talent. He's going to play for 15, 17 years, whatever. But they never, ever had that guy, that dude.
And to be next to Kat.
To be next to Kat. And let's be honest, Kat needs to be your second best player. Not saying that Kat's not a multi-time All-Star, not saying that Kat's not an All-NBA caliber player, but if he's your second best player, then you might be on to something. So the hope is because if Edwards can be your best player, or if he can get to the level where he's the best player on that team, and now Kat's your second best player, you got a chance.
Well.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, wait. Futuristic.
Oh, there we go.
Because this team could be a great team in the future, but they need some pieces to go with them. If you look at this duo, it's like a miniature. Notice keyword miniature.
Right.
Shaq and Kobe.
Oh, you're because you're tripping. You know,
it's just, come on, man.
You're because, allowed to say that.
I can
you're allowed
say
to say that.
I said miniature
them.
Now.
He
I said miniature.
With them.
But when you play with guards that are good and are big that can cause double team, you make each other better. So Edwards learns how to play this game and become a better ball handler, an outside shooter, and Kat can understand he's bigger than most guys, take him time to the post, and when that's not working, step on the outside and shoot the threes. This team could be one of those futuristic teams that we always talk about that we want this day and age, a stretch four, a stretch five, a stretch everything.
Yeah, that's why I like Kat, because he can go on the block, mm-hmm. he can do a ton of things, but ultimately, certain times you see what's going on.
Yeah.
Kat cannot be your best player. If you want to win a championship, Anthony Davis can't be your best player. And that is not a knock on these high-quality players. I just think that if Anthony Edwards can get to the point where he's the best player on the team,
right.
and just because of his talent and his ability, now you're really on to something.
Well, you could have this guy if you add, let's say, like the Detroit Pistons did when they won it. They all were equal in talent,
yes.
but they put it together.
But that's hard to do.
But you never know what can happen.
What, Miami, yeah. I think, did it. It had a chance at it last year if Dragic and all them.
Guys who are roughly equivalent, not one guy. I mean, Shaq and Kobe, who you played with, they certainly, each one of them would have told you that they were the best player on the Lakers.
That really was me.
Well, clearly. Right. There we go. I love Can I Have a Word? This segment will be back on The Jump. Coming up later on this show, though, we'll talk a little bit of Clippers. They haven't won consecutive games, as I mentioned, in more than a month. How concerned should their fans be about their inconsistencies? Let's switch gears, talk about the Clippers. They have not won back-to-back games since February 13th, and with a record of 5-8 during that span, Robert, how concerning is this trend for a team considering we hold them to a high standard because we consider them championship contenders?
We hold them at a high standard because they consider themselves championship material. They talked about it last year and it mm-hmm. didn't happen. Now they got rid of the coach and now we're saying, oh, well, now we have some issues with the offense. Now we're back on top. Apparently not, because you cannot go out and lose a game every other game. When you want to be a champion, true champions might lose one mm-hmm. in a month,
right.
but you losing every other game and you got what you wanted with a new coach. You got a new offense, but now you're out there not competing at a high level and not performing. We got a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem, because if you want to win a championship, you're going to most likely have to win two games in a row at some point in time. That's the only thing.
Now, they've won two games several times this season.
Several times. I'm talking about in the last month, yeah. as the season is winding down.
Yeah.
You don't need to be playing your best basketball, no. but you should be trending in the right direction.
I have some bad news for you, Richard.
What?
You know how the season was shifted this year? We didn't start till September, so
yeah.
March is no longer the last month. You got some time.
Did I say last month?
we got time.
I said in the last month, not like the last month of
before the playoffs. Okay, all right. Yes. No, I mean, look, and to the players' credit, they have said themselves.
Yeah.
You heard Kawhi Leonard the other day say he is, quote, very concerned, or that he's a big concern. So I think they're looking at it, but they are still looking for what can unlock this team to its true potential. A lot of people think that's getting a point guard. Mark Stein from the New York Times reporting the Clippers are interested in a potential trade for Lonzo Ball from the Pelicans. Richard, do you like the idea of bringing in Lonzo to upgrade their point guard position?
I think that would be a great idea. I think Lonzo is a young player, shot in the arm. His passing ability and playmaking will get guys easy buckets. So when we look at Paul George, who struggled in the fourth quarter, or Kawhi, who struggled in the fourth quarter last season, if you're able to get an easy bucket here because your point guard knows how to push, he knows how to create, drop you a dime, that can get you going. So I think if you're looking for something, and I think Lonzo's an above average defender, so he fits what you need and the way you want to play. So if they're able to pull it off, I think it's a good thing.
That's what makes this world so great. We all have different opinions. I don't think he would work with those teams.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the way Kawhi plays, he's a dribble-dribble guy.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Paul George, he's a dribble-dribble guy. why do you need a guy, a point guard, who can pass well when these guys get their offense off dribbling the basketball? So he's not needed. And plus, okay, you get down the stretch, you foul him, he goes to the free throw line. This guy is scared to shoot free throws. So you need a guy who has a strong will, strong-minded, even though he's a good defensive player and he's a good passer. These guys don't need a good passer. They need a guy that can do something else other than pass.
But this is my thing.
Well, they need someone to kind of organize the offense.
Yeah, I agree with your point. Yes. But you reference Kawhi and you reference Paul George. Yeah. Lonzo can help those guys a little bit, but it's also the other guys on the team. Like, he's the one, because Kawhi, his assist numbers are up over his than what he normally averages over his career, but he's not a great playmaker. Neither of those guys are dropping double-digit assists on consistent nights or on nights, so I just think that it will help. It's better than what they got.
It's better than what they have, but it's better than what they have, but still, though, will it be needed?
Well, I'm going to take this from the flip side, and I've been saying this since our reporters at ESPN were saying over the past couple weeks that Lonzo was available, or at least you could inquire about him.
He was
to the
dating.
Pelicans.
He's dating.
I think he's such a good fit, right, with Zion. If I'm the Pelicans, I don't know.
Well, they don't want to pay him. That's what they're saying. They're not going to pay him. That's the thing. The number they're asking.
He's going to pay him, though. He can't shoot free throws.
That's a pairing that I would keep together if I was David Griffin, but I'm not David Griffin.
Detroit.
So there you go. Up next, we will discuss the incredible scoring surge this season and whether or not it affects the way we should be interpreting statistics in this era. This is really interesting. I'm excited to dig into this. A couple older school guys, stick around for that. But first, here's what the Jump recommends for today. Zach Lowe's 10 things he likes and doesn't like, featuring Harden's amazing pocket passes for the Nets. Zach's got all the clips up there. It's really fun. Take a look during the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm happy to be in studio with Robert Ori, Richard Jefferson. There's an offensive boom in the league, people. That is causing records to break all the time, it seems. Here's a little proof. On Wednesday, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Nikola Jokic, Ben Simmons, Draymond Green, and Domantas Sabonis all recorded triple-doubles. Those six players logging a triple-double on the same day broke the record of five, which was set just 4 days earlier. That's not the only record that's toppled more than once recently. According to Mike Lynch of Basketball Reference, this season features 8 of the 9 best offenses in NBA history, according to offensive efficiency. The other offense, by the way, last year's Dallas Mavericks. So again, all within the past two seasons. The surge in three-point shooting has definitely continued this trend. Looking at combined attempted threes per game, nearly 35 are taken in an average today. That's nearly double what it was 10 years ago, 5 times what it was 30 years ago.
7 threes in the 90s?
To further illustrate this point, Larry Bird, who entered the league right as the three-point shot was introduced in 79-80, that he's widely regarded as the best three-point shooter of his time. Well, guess what, guys? He averaged two three-point shots a game in his career. Steph Curry, who is, of course, regarded as the best three-point shooter ever, and certainly of his time, basically averages more than that in a quarter this season. So everyone gets the point now, I am sure. Robert, we're going to start with you. How much should we put, like, how do you judge stats? The other night, right, Anthony Edwards, first rookie, right, to hit 40 since Kevin Durant and LeBron James. Do you put him in the Kevin Durant, LeBron James category because he did that, or is scoring inflate? Like, it's hard. How do you judge these stats you hear?
It's so hard to judge this because back when Richard and I played, as you saw the stats, we didn't shoot that many threes. The game is a lot faster. There's so many elements to this game. If you really watch a game, I would love to see how many times a guy scores off of travel. Mm-hmm. How many times a guy scores off a carry. There's so many rules that are being broken that the NBA are allowing. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that kind of upsets me. Even when you shoot a three now, if you jump, the guy catapults in towards you, and it's a foul, and you go shoot the threes. I mean, the free throws. So those are things that the NBA and the stats and all these things don't come into play. But I'm happy that these guys are doing this because it makes the league look good. But I still say that I don't like it because there's too many threes, and guys just go to the free throw line way too much for me.
I like that bump right there by Rick Mahorn. But this is I guess the best way to really, like, break this down is that all these teams that are doing what they're doing, it is impressive. But understand, there is no fans in there. There is no fans in there, and travel has changed. We saw elevated numbers in the bubble. And maybe this is kind of like, maybe that was kind of a little bit of a foreshadowing into what we are right now. Numbers are elevated. Travel is different. Players are not allowed to go and be social. They're not allowed to go out in certain cities.
Are you saying that Miami flu is not
a threat? No, the Miami flu is not real. Like, it's there, you know, so that's the thing. We saw elevated numbers in the bubble because players were really just focused.
Yeah.
And so I'm not surprised here that with the rule changes, the three-point shots, no fans, and different travel schedules, and you're not allowed to go out and be social, that offenses are through the roof.
Everybody wants to be like Steph now. You remember when we were coming up, we wanted to be like MJ, and MJ was dunking on people, but now everybody wants to J-Yip from three. Mm-hmm. So that's the trend, too. Now kids at home are watching this and say, oh, make it to the league, I got to shoot threes.
Mm-hmm. I'm scared where it's going to be in 10 years. If this, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, if Steph...
I don't mean scared in a bad way.
No, you could be scared in a good way. Like, yo, you see that? You see that? You got a 7-foot center shooting threes. That's scary. You got Joel Embiid doing step backs like he's Hakeem, right? That part is scary. What's really strange is, like, if kids are watching this right now and they see Steph and Dame shooting and making the ball from half court...
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do? Like, when I watched MJ, I went and tried to work on the fadeaway. I couldn't do it the way he did it, but I had it.
No, the crazy thing is, after you watch an All-Star game, no matter if you're in high school, college, what you see, you go out and work on the next day. Now, I guarantee you, half the kids in America went out and started trying to shoot threes from half court because that's what we saw on the NBA TV.
Okay, so I like that big men are more skilled. It makes the game more fun for me as a fan. I like these guys shooting. I get excited when Damian Lillard pulls up from the logo. I'm like, woo, there he goes. You know, that's fun. I have no problem with any of this. The problem I am having as someone whose job it is to sit here and analyze the game every day is how do you compare, right? How do you have those comparisons? And when you're talking about comparisons between players of this era, like when we judge MVP stats or something like that, on the one hand, they're all playing in the same game, right? So you should feel like, okay, well, these stats are comparable. But one of the arguments for Giannis for MVP last year, and I voted for him, so this argument mattered to me, was these numbers aren't just good or better than some of the other guys in the league. They're historic. He was putting up numbers in categories, 4 or 5 categories that had never been done before. And I was like, well, that means something to me. But as we have seen the continuation of score inflation, as we go to judge that this year, as we sit here and say, man, not so many, you know, triple
like
doubles.
The steroid era in baseball.
Anthony Edwards. Well, I don't know. Like, how do you put those into sort of, how do you put the whole picture into
it? It's hard, and I think you can only do it after multiple years. So, like, next year, mm-hmm. we can talk about it this year, and we can point out all the numbers, but then next year, okay, let's see if the scoring drops a little bit because players can go out, and then there's you can be more social, and then you have fans in there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see if those numbers drop. And then in 2 or 3 years, I think to do it in the moment, we can just be enjoying and knowing it, but knowing that the best defenses, even though they're not great defenses in historic standards, mm-hmm. are still going to be the teams that win championships.
Right. When that word analytics came into basketball, that's when it messed it up because everybody says three is more than two. Yeah. Now everybody wants to shoot three. So everybody looked at this Golden State Warriors team. So they're shooting threes and winning championships. This is a different type of beast. They have guys that are elite. You don't have elite guys that shoot threes, so you're not going to be in the same category. So everybody always try to take that model and duplicate it, but you can't sometimes. So this is why you
got to be smart. When you got a guy like DeAndre Ayton, this is one of my beasts. DeAndre Ayton is one of the most talented young big men, bear down, love the kid, but he's shooting like 3 free throws a night.
Mm-hmm.
You're a 7-foot dude built like David Robinson.
Yes.
And I think that is a crime. And he's a good roller, and maybe he's not as aggressive, and maybe he needs to work on some things.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you have a 7-footer that is the number one pick in the draft that is averaging, you know, 18 and whatever, shooting 2 free throws a game means that there's a lot of physicality that is lost. And he could dominate down there with the size and skill that he has.
You know, we can't always just blame the players. We have to blame the coaches, too, because
Damn
when
right.
you have a talent like that, use them. Just don't say, oh, this is the day and age where we shoot threes. Go shoot a 3, big fella, because you can be effective. No, use him. Make him, put him in a position to be successful. Don't put him in a position to fail. And that's what these guys are doing now when they're trying to force guys to shoot threes.
Well, look, extremes in anything are a bad idea, right?
Yeah.
So saying everybody has to do it this way, that's not good, right? So obviously true. Some nuance. I do think some of the things, the trends toward moving toward threes or the way coaches are using players, I do think they're not all bad. I think some of those are good. I always defend the word analytics. Analytics just means math, statistics.
Yeah, that's not what sports are about.
Right? Well,
sports are not about smart things.
Well, no, but the question is, how do you use them? Do you use them as the ruler of all decisions, that extreme, or do you use it as an extra piece of information in your toolkit? When it is used as an extra piece of information, I think those advanced stats are really, really helpful. But again, it is where I'm having a problem. One of the advanced stats that Giannis had historic numbers in last year, never been done before, was his player efficiency. We didn't look at player efficiency 20, 25 years ago. It wasn't a stat that people had, that voters had, that the fans had at their disposal.
For good reason.
So we had the more sort of general, the eye test, how much is he sort of counting for what he does for your team? And other things fall into that eye test besides the hard numbers. So that's kind of where some of that comes in. And you got to try to put it in context. It's interesting. We're watching it. Another era change before our eyes. You're all eye test. There we go. Well, you've seen plenty. You've seen seven championship teams from the inside.
I'm all about the eye test.
Your eye test means something to me. And there we go. We now welcome in WNBA player, ESPN analyst, Chinne Igumike. Chinne, I want to start off by showing a video from Sedona Prince from Oregon. She shared it on social media yesterday from the women's tourney site in San Antonio. Take a look.
I got something to show y'all. So for the NCAA March Madness, the biggest tournament in college basketball for women, this is our weight room. Let me show y'all the men's weight room. Now, when pictures of our weight room got released versus the men's, the NCAA came out with a statement saying that it wasn't money, it was space that was a problem. Let me show y'all something else. Here's our practice court, right? And then here's that weight room. And then here's all this extra space. If you aren't upset about this problem, then you're a part of it.
Amen, man. I think that's just not acceptable. This is from Arizona women's coach, Adia Barnes. She said, someone dropped the ball on it. There's nothing to do but fix it because it's not right. I was embarrassed when I saw it. There's just a lot of things that have to change, but it takes people like me that were pro players being a voice for things to change. And guys, it was not just the workout facilities that caused alarm. We also saw photos of the difference in the bags they give to the athletes, the meals, some of that kind of stuff. So Chinne, what does it feel like you played ball at Stanford to see the disparity in these images?
When I saw the quote unquote weight room, I was mad. But honestly, Rach, I was not surprised. As female athletes, we deal with the comparisons, we deal with the criticisms constantly, and we know to expect less. And we have always been told to be grateful for what we have. But that was just straight disrespect, honestly. And the crazy part is, how is the system that is literally profiting off of this grand stage of March Madness, the system that is supposed to support these amazing athletes, how are they the ones that are reinforcing negative gender stereotypes like that? I mean, women don't need a legit weight room. Here are a few dumbbells and a few yoga mats. That was the most baffling part for me. Again, we know that as women, we are fighting an uphill battle in sports. But for the teams that have fought so hard this season, especially to get to March, you know, my school, Stanford, played 2 months straight on the road, you know, this season. They all fought to get here, and then they're instantly reminded that, here we go, you're less than. Well, I'm here to say you are not. Not on my watch, not on our watch. So the system needs to be better. Women are top tier athletes, period, and deserve better. And when I saw those videos, I was like, wow, we still have a lot of work to do.
Two things. One, do you know how many people and how many months they planned this out for?
Right.
Months. They've been doing this for 6 months.
Right. How many people had to approve that plan?
Thank you. How many people? And it's not just men. There are women. There was no woman trainer from the NCAA. There was nobody that stepped up and be like, yo, this isn't real. Or maybe they thought that was a joint weight room for men and women. Because a weight rack is what I have in my garage. That is not a weight room. So that to me is a joke. And then lastly, when will we learn that the NCAA is a bunch of gangsters? They don't care. They show you consistently that the NCAA does not care about student athletes the way they try and act like they do. They play this professionalism. They play this amateurism. The NCAA cares about money, and that is truly it. It is a nonprofit organization that there are hundreds of people that make millions of dollars working inside of it. Just think about that.
Yeah, it's hard to look at this image because we know NCAA is all about the mighty dollar. And right there, they says, okay, who's going to need the money more? Who are we going to dedicate this money to? Not the young ladies. Even though the young ladies are some of the most exciting guys or women to watch this game, and they're not dedicating this game, this thing to them. So that's the problem I have, because most of the time during the NCAA tournament, do guys really lift weights anyway?
No.
You don't have the time. And you're secluded in hotels right now. So save that money, donate it to someone, and stop wasting on those weights that those guys not even use. So, you know, not just taking away from the women because they need it too, but I'm just saying, don't waste the money on weights, period. Use the money somewhere else.
There was also an article in The Athletic this morning about some of the female coaches who are working in the tournament and how the NCAA is basically penalizing them and their teams if they have, say, a baby who depends on them for food. That baby counts inside the bubble against the total that they can bring in. So that coach's team, if they want to feed their child, has to have one less athletic trainer, one less other coach, one less person in the traveling party.
Ridiculous.
I don't understand how you tell women, if you would like to be a functioning adult and also continue to be a good mother, your team will be penalized. It is.
When the NCAA shows you who they are, just believe them. Just believe them.
There we go. Chinee, let's talk about the people we should be talking about, the women competing on the court. And, you know, we're a professional basketball show, so we want to know, who are the top WNBA prospects playing in the tourney? Who are we going to see coming up through the draft?
Thank you. Let's give them the attention they deserve, rightfully so. The players to keep an eye on, here's my list. Let's start with Charlie Collier out of the University of Texas. Of course, I've got to put my girl Dana Evans out of Louisville on there, who was a bucket for the second straight year. She's ACC Player of the Year, scoring point guard, whose game is built for this month. And of course, you know, there are players that are not draft eligible yet, but watch out for Aaliyah Boston out of South Carolina, averaging a double-double and is a blocking machine. Dawn Staley, you know her group stays ready, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Paige Beckers out of UConn, of course. Everyone knows her name. She had one of the best seasons as a freshman. But here's Charlie Collier that I love. I mean, again, likely going to be number one pick in the WNBA draft. She's a stretch five out of UT. And so, you know, she's been in the mix. She's able to dominate on both ends. I love her game, but of course, you know, I had to throw Paige in there. I know she's not draft eligible yet, but a lot of people are very, very excited about her game as a floor general, especially this season, because they're dealing with a scenario without Coach Gino Auriemma available due to COVID protocol. So her leadership is going to come up super clutch for them, but I think we're most excited to see what this freshman will do this month. So that's my list. The tournament's going to be lit. I'm not saying women's tournament. It's a tournament. We got to start making that distinction. But it's going to be fun to watch all of March Madness go down.
Chinee, do I even need to bother asking who your pick to win the tourney is?
Oh, Stanford. Stan, yeah. You, baby.
Arizona.
Stanford, number one overall
Arizona,
seed.
Arizona, Adia.
Richard.
Hey, congratulations on the contract
Stanford,
extension, Adia. It
number
is
one.
Deserved.
It's our time.
Let me know.
Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back here
Bear
on the
down.
Show.
Don't doubt Dawn.
Just at the buzzer, Bucks coach Mike Budenholzer says he expects P.J. Tucker to make his Bucks debut tomorrow against the Spurs. Richard, how much of an impact do you expect Tucker to make in a Bucks uni?
I think it's going to help defensively. Do I think that would have been the best place for P.J. Tucker? No. Right. I think there were other places that they could have used his services more than they do in Milwaukee. But he's a great piece. Great addition.
Yeah, he's a great veteran. He can add some 3-point percentages from the corner. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, defense. And that's what that mm-hmm. team needs. They need a guy who can play the 1-5 position. So defensively, they've gotten better.
Yeah.
And toughness, too. Right. I mean, the toughness they had with him, Andrew Holiday. Like, I think that contributes to the overall locker room and how they are out on the court.
I don't know. I just think that, like, that's a great situation for Milwaukee. But if PJ Tucker were to choose, and it's not about Milwaukee, I'm saying that like a team that he could have
like the fit was
the fit more. Perfect. I think there were other places that probably had a fit more, but Milwaukee was willing to pay.
Now, Robert, do the Bucks getting PJ, is that enough to feel that it changes where you think they'll finish in the East, or they still need to do more for you?
They had to do a lot more.
Yeah.
They got to first compete and get Lopez to get more rebounds, stop shooting so many threes. They need a lot of stuff. You know, they're good, but mm-hmm. they still need a lot of stuff to be one of the best teams in the East.
Well, that's why there was a big push last year of, hey, this is your chance, because everyone knew Kevin Durant was coming back for the Nets. Yeah. We didn't know that James Harden was going to join him there, but the top of the East, more competitive even than it was last year.
Fleeting.
The Heat back up there, too. All right, we're out of time this week. We'll be back Tuesday. See you then.